Does the Bible talk in code? We're going to hear about it with Dr. Jim Coakley. We're going to hear the answer to that. And Dr. Jim Coakley has taught at the Moody Bible Institute for over 20 years in both the seminary and undergraduate school, part of the Moody Bible Commentary and the Moody Handbook of Messianic Prophecy. His new book, 14 Fresh Ways to Enjoy the Bible. And good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Ken and Deb. Yeah, great to be with you again.
Always good to have you on, Jim. All right, so I've never heard of this before. Tell me about code language.
Yeah, code language, and we're not talking about the hidden Bible code that was the rage
yes.
like a decade ago where trying to find
right.
word search in the words, but we're just talking about how people use kind of veiled language to communicate. I mean, even the whole genre of what we call apocalyptic literature, the visions of Revelation and Daniel, are coded language. But what I'm talking about here is just basically what we traditionally call euphemisms, where we use roundabout words to talk about, I like the way Deb said it earlier, indelicate matters.
Yes.
So the idea of issues of regarding sex or death or bathroom-related issues, we use what are called technical terms, circumlocutions or euphemisms, roundabout ways to kind of remove some of the kind of directness that is sometimes kind of used in more clinical kind of settings.
So would you?
Wow,
you get the
award for the big word of the day there,
yes,
Jim.
Yes, he does. We learned something already. So how is this used in Scripture? Give us an example.
Well, I mean, probably the main ones are relating to death, bathroom, and sex. But death, let's talk about death. It talks about the fact that we have, you know, like even in 1 Kings chapter 2, it talks about when David's time drew near, he charged his son Solomon saying, "I'm about to go the way of all the earth." Okay, basically David's saying, "I'm going to die." But he uses the phrase, "I'm going, the way of all the earth."
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's the idea of the universalism of death. But instead of saying, "Hey, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna kick the bucket." I mean, even that's a euphemism. Is we are kind of softening the harsh reality of death, and so we use these kind of roundabout ways to communicate. Probably the most famous one is sleep, because that's used a lot in the New Testament. When Lazarus dies, Jesus, in speaking to his disciples, says, "Well, Lazarus is asleep." And the disciples thought, "Oh, okay, that's good. He's getting some good rest." But then Jesus has to come around and explain the euphemism and say, "No, Lazarus is dead."
Right.
And so even in the rapture passage in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, it uses the notion of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are asleep in Jesus, and those, when the rapture occurs, we're not going to precede those who are asleep. And so we're not talking about people who are snoring away during the evening. We're talking about people who have died. And so we use sleep, but that even has some meaning to it, because we're talking about the fact that death is not permanent. It's like you are going to awake.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's meaning in the euphemism more than just saying, "Hey, somebody died."
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's great. So now what about some of the other delicate topics that we have here, like maybe bathroom-related issues?
Yeah, I mean, even that, we talk about bathroom or washroom. You know, "I'm going to the bathroom, I'm going to the washroom." Well, we all know what you're doing. You're not going to take a bath in there. You're going to do some physiological function there. And another big word there for you.
Yeah, thank you.
The idea is, it's kind of, topics that are something, you need some discretion, you want to be polite, you want to use indirect language. And so we can understand that we don't want to necessarily be, too explicit with some of these things.
Right.
And so even the Bible uses some of these things. We talk about relieving ourselves or covering our feet. And so, these are things there that the Bible uses kind of roundabout ways to communicate what everyone knows what's going to happen, but we don't want to speak about it too directly. And so I think in that case, we talk about really the idea of cleanliness. We think about trying to avoid being offensive or overly explicit. And so the Bible is sensitive to that, and realizing that there are kind of mixed audiences. I remember when I took my kids to on a tour in downtown Seattle, and we went on an underground Seattle tour. And, of course, Seattle's history is pretty seedy with all of the lumberjacks in town and all of the houses of prostitution that were frequented there. And so we took this tour, and even though it was a family tour with even our young kids, the leader of the group said, "Well, when I talk about seamstresses," she winked at us. She says, "You know what I'm talking about." And so we would go around on a tour, and she said, "Well, there's 50 seamstresses that worked in this establishment." Well, they're not making dresses. They were, servicing the lumberjacks. And so this is one of the ways that we kind of are able to use coded language so that even in a mixed audience, we can talk about delicate matters in a way that's appropriate for their age.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking when I first started working here, Jim, we couldn't use the word pregnant on air. So we would have to say with child was probably the most popular way of saying it. But it's interesting how language does change and the appropriateness of it for the culture that we're in as well. But there's some words in the Bible that address the delicate matter of sex as well in a little different way. So let's go there for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, some of the ones, Adam knew his wife. And so, of course, we know that he just didn't know her name. He had sexual relations with her. Lie down with somebody. He lied down with his, or uncover the nakedness. Or I love the one in the story of Isaac with Rebecca. He's sporting with his wife. And so there's something going on there between Isaac and Rebecca that's more than just playing tennis. And so, that's, the indelicate nature of, sexual relations. You want to talk about it in ways that people know what's going on, but they don't use the direct terms. But even here, once again, there is a piece of information that comes when you say about a husband knowing his wife or a wife knowing her husband. It does speak of intimacy more than just the physicality of the sexual act. Mm-hmm. It really speaks of the intimacy that's there that's more than just physical. Or lying with. You can talk about sex without being graphic. And that's why, you read a book like Song of Songs, Song of Solomon, and it's full of sexual imagery, but it's not graphic. It's just a way that is able to bring up the subject in a way that is appropriate and not graphic and not pornographic. And so even the idea of uncovering the nakedness, really we're speaking about the fact that there's a vulnerability involved and intimacy involved, and especially inappropriate ones where that's that. And even the kind of he went unto so-and-so. So judges in with Samson, that judges went into a prostitute in Gaza and he went into her. He's doing more than just going into her room. He's involved in sexual acts. And so the idea is that in those kind of situations, I think we're talking about inappropriate kind of personal relationships. Where it's not just knowing, because Adam or Samson didn't know this prostitute in the intimate sense of a personal relationship. It was just really the mere physicality of the sexual act. And so even the way that the Bible uses these euphemisms can help the reader to kind of really get the perspective of how the biblical author wants you to be viewing what's happening here.
It adds such a depth to understanding. Those two.
Yeah, and so that's really where, you say, why do the biblical authors use euphemisms? I mean, we kind of understand there's matters that need to be kind of handled appropriately. But then there's also ways sometimes that that kind of being delicate kind of gets in the way. Because sometimes we have these euphemisms and we kind of miss maybe what's going on with, like, for instance, the aspect of sporting with his wife, Isaac with Rebecca. But we have one like Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 5. And this is not a main thing. It might be a possible understanding when it talks about in Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time to throw away stones and to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. Well, in ancient literature, not just in the Bible, casting stones was a euphemism for sexual activity. And so when you look at the next part of the line, embracing and refraining from embracing, basically it's saying, hey, there's a time for sexual relations and there's a time for you refrain from sexual relations. And so this is then the way that we do that, but we might read that and we might miss the euphemism. And so there is a danger sometimes with using coded language that we might not actually get what's going on. Or we can talk about, you know, Abraham's servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham. Well, thigh is like, okay, it's probably more for Abraham's genitalia. And because we're talking about progeny, we're talking about the sexual organ that is involved with progeny. And so it makes very awkward kind of understanding to us that the servant would touch Abraham's genitalia. But this is then the trust, the nature of what's happening here with trying to find an heir for his son to pass on the lineage. All of a sudden now, that delicate nature of thigh, if people think literally, they really might be missing what actually happens.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, it brings so much more to our reading when we understand these types of different styles and ways of writing. And just so appreciate your wisdom, Jim.
Yeah, definitely.
Every time we talk with you, learn some new stuff. And excited about your book, too, called 14 Fresh Ways to Enjoy the Bible, which is available now. If you want to go to moodybooks.org, and you can do a search for Jim, and it'll bring up his books. But anyway, dude, we so appreciate your wisdom, Jim, and always appreciate the time you spend with us. So thanks for spending time with us, and have a great holiday weekend.
All right. Thanks, Ken and Deb, and to all the listeners, you too.